Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of the Union Federation Podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network and BQN Networks. I am in the captain's chair. I'm Kyle. It's been a while since I've done this. I think I've got everything set. I believe I have the inertial dampeners off so I can back this thing out of Starbase, but you're going to bear with me a little bit. I've just been freed from Planet Taxium, which has more numbers than even Amy Nelson wants to deal with, but you know what? It's going to be a good time. I'm glad to be back, glad to be here to take over the ship and pilot us through the rest of this final season of Star Trek Discovery, but I can't do it without a crew. And first and foremost, I've got to welcome back the woman who kept Kevin in check while I was away, which is never an easy thing. She is, of course, the top-notch holographic co-captain. She is the ship's counselor, and boy, do I need some counseling after tax season. But ladies and gentlemen, the wonderful Amy Nelson.
Well, hello, Kyle. So glad to see you back in the captain's chair. We have missed you.
Yeah, I think there might be a loose screw here or there.
Just feel for it. It'll all come back.
I don't know, but it is good to be here. I'm looking forward to catching up on Discovery and sharing our thoughts. But you know what? I'm excited because not only am I back on the ship this week, and I already know she's back in the gunner's chair and she knows all her buttons like it's nothing. But it's our favorite science officer too, the wonderful Haley Stoddard.
Hello. I'm so excited. I finally got out of sick bay. I mean, I literally have a permanent space there. Mm. I've been there so much that I have my own bed and it's got my name on it. It's a plaque. It's really pretty. Hoping there was no shenanigans, but I was ready to hit the buttons if I had to.
Which doctor is helping you? This is an interesting question.
I have had help from everybody. Because, you know, they've been pulling up notes from McCoy and Colbert's been there. And I mean, they've all come in and helped because it's been a process, let me tell you.
Every time I go to sick bay, I request Nurse Chapel, but for some reason it just doesn't happen. I don't know why.
Guys, she's been having fun with my case. Let's just
put you are much more important. I mean, but guys, we are here to talk the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery, the final season, the final adventure of Star Trek Discovery. And the episode we're going to be talking about is season five, episode four, Face the Strange, which very interesting episode. I'm looking forward to talking about it. But of course, before we get started, this is the Union Federation podcast, and on watching this, whether it's on YouTube or listening to the audio podcast, you can find it on the Fandom Podcast Network as well as the BQN Network. And of course, Amy, you guys are busy over there. Every time I turn around, you've assimilated some new podcaster. You are the official podcast board queen.
Well, we are trying to assimilate the audio, so come on over to BQN. You can find Union Federation there, so make sure to subscribe to the app so you won't miss an episode, and check out our other shows.
And of course, too, we are talking about season five of Discovery, and there's a very sharp looking crew, I must say. I'm loving these uniforms. That's just, and Brooke has a style all his own. We'll get into that later, because there was a scene in this week's episode. I think I heard Amy gasp.
Oh, yes.
from here. So, guys, before we get started, of course, Haley and I have been out of the loop here a little bit, but I wanted to just kind of give our thoughts so far on this season of Discovery. And I got to say, so far, this final season might be my favorite season of Discovery. I am loving what they're doing. It feels different from what we've gotten the last couple seasons of Discovery. And I love the energy. It feels like they're including the more elements of the cast and different people. And especially the opening two episodes, Amy, were just fantastic.
Yeah, the change in tone is quite different. I love the slighter humor, one-liners that are coming in at the appropriate time. The action is lighter because of the one-liners. They're happy. They're a happy family. I feel like they're finally getting their stride, because I had some rough seasons before then, but this one, pretty good.
Haley, what about you? What have you thought so far of this final season of Star Trek Discovery?
Up until this episode that we're going to talk about, I actually was like, okay, I don't like the first episode I watched, and I was like, oh, it kind of left me feeling meh. honestly, I wasn't sure that I was going to be down for another season of Discovery with the first episode. And then the second episode, I was like, okay, I'm getting there. And the third one, all right, okay. And then finally, yeah, this fourth episode, I'm like, okay, I'm feeling a little bit of a groove with it. And I'm feeling the story a little bit more. I'm intrigued. I find it super interesting that we're pulling this really random TNG episode kind of concept out. And again, the universe is at stake, and I'm really kind of tired of that. But so I'm writing it out at this
point. I think that's fair. One of the things, and Amy, I think I kind of hit on it. I just love the fact that we're getting more of the crew. Yes, it's still Burnham's show and she's the spotlight, but it really does feel like we're getting more focus on some of the characters, other characters in Discovery so far. Obviously not the full bridge crew. I would like to see them a little bit more, but Stamets is getting more time. Culver's getting more time, and just across the board, they're addressing a lot more things. Admirable. I like the fact that they're also including the characters that they've introduced from this current timeline that they're in. And they're made, you know, obviously, Amy, we know the more Admiral Vance on your screen, the better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, like, now Rayner's learning the crew. And so we're getting to know the crew through him, which, again, we need to know our crew because it's still spotty.
And I will say this show missed Tilly. Tilly might be the heart of the show.
I can agree with that.
She brings an energy to every scene she's in. And Mary Wiseman is just wonderful. But I'm really pleased with this. I'm, of course, it's with Discovery. It's kind of one of those things that's always been with me for this show, is it has highs and it has lows in every season. So we'll see how this plays out. But so far, I've been enjoying the ride. But with that, guys, I'm going to engage the warp engines and see if we can break the warp bubble to start talking about this week's episode. And before we get started, spoiler alert. That is right. We're going to be diving deep into this week's episode of Star Trek Discovery, and I am really looking forward to discussing it and catching up with everybody. So let's get things with our first away mission. Once again, we are talking about Star Trek Discovery Season 5, Episode 4, Face the Strange. And there was a lot of strange in this episode. And so we've got a lot of interesting things to talk about. Amy Nelson, would you be so kind as to give us the Admiral's Log episode and synopsis?
Well, I'm going to pass that to Haley this time.
Okay. Are you ready, Haley? Are you up for it? Yep. I know you get a little, they were giving you some of that extra special stuff in sick bay. So
I am ready for this. I have been ready for weeks. In order to stall Discovery, Locke and Maul infect the ship with a time bug, a weapon left over from the temporal wars that paralyzes Discovery by trapping it in a time cycle. As they were in the middle of beaming to the bridge after an argument about Rayner's approach to command, both Burnham and Rayner are unaffected, as is Stamets due to his tardigrade DNA. The three jump through various periods of the ship's history, including when it was under construction, fighting control, traveling through the wormhole to the future, and being hijacked by Osira. One jump takes Burnham and Rayner nearly 30 years into the future, where they discover that the cost of failure is Locke and Maul finding the technology and selling it to the Breen, who use it to devastate the Federation. Using her personal knowledge of a version of Discovery from a few weeks after she had first boarded the ship to help successfully break the cycle, Rayner gets a new perspective on things and adopts a less gruff demeanor. However, the delay has allowed Locke and Maul to get ahead of them in the search for the next clue.
Okay, guys, this was a fun episode. It had some interesting things in it, and I want to kind of get everybody's first reactions. But one of the things I wanted to point out real quick to me is Locke and Maul a little bit more evil than I initially were going to give them credit for, because that was some dirty pool they played at the beginning of this episode.
Ooh, you think so?
Poisoning the guy and basically killing him.
Do you know what that guy did, though?
Oh, I understand that, but that's still some pretty dirty pool what they did there.
I think we've seen worse, and I think the writers are trying to have them still be sympathetic, because yeah, that guy is not a good guy.
No, that's true. But Haley, I'm going to go with you since you haven't been with us and I haven't been around. What were your first impressions of this episode?
Like I said, this is the first episode so far this season that's really kind of piqued my interest and I found enjoyable. So from beginning to end, I'm intrigued to what's going to happen with Locke and Maul. Are they going to stop them? Are they going to realize, like, part of me wonders if they actually know what this technology really is and really can do, because, you know, she says, hey, we can use this and we can break free, and, you know, trying to find their freedom and buying their freedom. And I wonder if they could find their freedom another way, and maybe somehow Discovery is going to, you know, help them find a different path to find their freedom. I mean, Book already knows who she is, knows of her. So that's my Oracle coming out right there, that somehow these two are going to team up with Discovery and save the universe and find their freedom some other route than the path they're currently on. And, you know, the jumping through time is always enjoyable when that happens. And I love the interactions that they tried to avoid, but then when they did happen, they were really thought out, really well done. And so that was very interesting. And I immediately went to, I don't know if you guys did, and we'll get to it, but when they jump forward 30 years in time, immediately went to the short track. And I was like, because that's where that was. She was all by herself, right? So anyway, mm-hmm. I really enjoyed this episode.
Amy, what about you? What were your initial thoughts on this episode?
So very interesting. Excuse me. I'm opposite you, Haley. This is the first episode I don't enjoy for season 5. I just, number one, I got so lost in the jumping because I was trying to figure out mathematically what's the pattern that they were trying to figure out. So I was too involved because it didn't explain really anything, this time bug. And then they're going backwards and forwards. Like usually in Star Trek, we have the loops where you're either repeating or you're going back. And then they were going back and forth and everywhere, which was pretty cool. So good job for surprising me on that. But then everything else was so predictable. And I'm sorry, I'm not used to Star Trek being predictable. Of course, Rayner and Burnham are going to come together, have their kumbaya moment. Rayner's going to figure out he needs to learn the crew. Of course, Burnham's going to run into herself. Of course, Burnham's going to save the crew and have the crew, you know, oh, I know you. Like, it just was too predictable for me. So it's been a tough one for me, but I still liked it. It hasn't decreased my hope that this is going to be the best season yet. Kyle, what about you?
I have a mixed bag on this episode because there's things I really liked about this episode. I loved the interaction, especially between Rayner and Stamets in this episode. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really well done. I loved a lot of the interactions, like between Jet and Stamets. It was great. And I actually thought Tony Rapp kind of steals this episode a little bit. He was really good in it. But this episode also felt like, okay, we need to do an episode where we play our greatest hits. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of this episode, because we're in such an intriguing story with them going after these clues to put this map together and what we've seen so far. I talked about it a little bit earlier. I loved last week's episode where they went to Trill. I thought I really enjoyed that. I thought Wilson Cruz was a tour de force in that episode. Yes. He was great in that. And I love the revelation about who Maul is, in relation to Booker, because I think that really plays up on everything he went through and thinking he has no family left anymore. And I really like that. This episode just kind of felt like, okay, we're going to take a pause because we know this is our final season. Let's give people a reminder of where we've been. Some of it worked. Some of it, I was like, I'm not so sure about this, because it just felt like It felt like, okay, this is the halfway point of the season break episode where we're going to just kind of review what's been going on. And in this case, though, it was a review of the entire run of Discovery. So that's kind of where I came out of it, was like, I like the characters, I like some of the concepts, but it also felt like, okay, this is our rehash episode.
It was a good rehash episode, but remember, excuse me, at the time when they wrote the script and produced and filmed, they didn't know this was the last season.
That's true.
So it's even more fittingly appropriate now that we know it is the last season to have this beautiful recap, you know, from season one up till now.
No, like I said, it does fit for being part of the season. It just felt like, we're a little early in the season to be doing this. I think that's kind of where I got a little thrown by it.
Although, like, I like the concept. I think what I liked about this, though, was this concept of using this kind of stall tactic, right? This little bug that comes in and throws you for a time loop. So they lost 6 hours where they could have, you know, figured out where Locke and Maul were, or they could have had a, you know, potential up on them as far as getting to the next clue and getting the next piece of this puzzle. And so I think that, like, this little tactic of this time thing is really kind of interesting. Also, I think as far as Rainer's character, this, he knew about the crew and he's really able to withhold knowledge and, like, keep knowledge in his brain about everybody, which is fascinating. I think for him to finally see, I think that's what helped him see, yeah, this crew, they are really comfortable with each other, but that doesn't mean they don't get crap done. And that doesn't mean that they can't do things, even though they're really comfortable with each other. And so I think for him, it was a pivotal thing for his character growth to finally come out of this jerk mode that he's been in, which is totally understandable. You've been demoted, you've lost a captaincy, and now, you know, you were going to have nothing. You were going to be forced to retire. And now you're part of this other crew and you're not in command. You're not in charge. And, you know, he is of a different time as well. And so I think for him that his character growth really, this episode did really well for that in showing him they still can get stuff done.
Yeah, I really liked Burnham's line when she's like, you know, getting to know people can lead to complacency or feeling comfortable or, you know, letting walls down, but it doesn't have to be. Like, making a connection is not a skill, it's a choice. And that was so beautiful. And she sort of was like, yeah, it was my bad for not explaining that up front. I mean, it sort of is obvious, duh, Rainer, but I'll apologize that I didn't inform you of that philosophy.
Yeah.
But I also think, as far as that goes, and we'll talk about Rainer a little bit more too in this episode, because I have some other thoughts on that. It's an interesting situation because the Discovery crew is so tight because they don't have anybody else to truly relate to from their own time frame and what they've been through with everything over this course of these seasons. I think what they've been through in a way makes them probably the tightest and most familiar crew of any of the Star Trek shows, because they are all in the same boat of time stranded now together. They have that. So there's more seeking refuge in that protective bubble. And now you have Rainer coming in, who is up this time trying to join this crew. And it's really something they hadn't really addressed, I think, in Discovery, is by mixing in somebody who's from the current timeline onto the crew on a regular basis. And that different perspective of somebody who was there when the burn happened and been through all of that. And so I think it's really made an interesting dynamic between Rainer and the crew. And I think it's one of those things where it's like, well, I've lived through these things, but we've lived through these things.
But he's no, still right?
He's still trying to get through that bubble a little bit that the crew has to understand it. And because he can't understand, because he hasn't been through what they've been through. But then again, they haven't been through what he's been through either.
Kyle, you bring up an excellent point that he is from the 32nd century. Remember when we got introduced to the new bridge crew, where it wasn't Detmer and Owo? There were brand new people. Those people had to be from the future, because at the end of season two, they took a very skeleton crew.
Yeah.
So they can't. So these people had to have been trained on old Discovery style. I know it was refit, but it's still an old ship. So they had to be trained. But you're right. They didn't show that there's probably, as you're pointing out, some contention between 32nd people, century people, and 22nd century people. You're right. You're spot on. There is going to be some conflict.
And I don't think it's not even intentional conflict. It's just going to be conflict because of human nature.
Yeah, and exactly.
So because you're dealing with unknowns and you're dealing with these people from the past, or these people from the past are trying to understand their own future and everything. So I think that's one of the things that until now, Discovery really hasn't played up on that aspect enough. So I'm curious to see if this is going to play out more throughout this season. But guys, yes, Haley.
Well, I was going to say to that, it's, you know, the crew of the Discovery, they have a shared collective trauma. They have their own history and traumatic experiences that have happened to them. And then you have Rayner, and he's had his own traumatic experiences that are completely different, and they color their views. And so you have all these people trying to relate to each other. And it's difficult because their collective experiences are so vastly different because they're 900 years apart. I mean, these guys shouldn't even be alive, you know, whatsoever. And so it's quite interesting.
You know, there was one thing I was thinking about this episode too, with all these time jumps. It makes me wonder if they would have known at the time they were filming this final season, would they have made an effort to get Jason Isaacs and have Lorca appear on screen? And that could have been very interesting.
I don't know. Budget.
Yeah.
I hear Jason Isaacs. That's all I think. Budget.
Yeah. That's true too. But guys, I found some very interesting trivia for this episode. So let's check into that. Okay. So I did a little research. I found a little trivia and Easter eggs for this episode, because there was a few fun ones in this. First, let's talk about that creepy little time bug. I'm like, I can understand why Stamets just wanted to be able to squash it. But there's actually some interesting things with the time bug. Rayner realizes that the reason he and Burnham are cycling through time is because of a weapon called a time bug. Rayner also says it's also called a Krenim chronophage, which references the alien species, the Krenim, from the famous Voyager 2 parter, Year of Hell. In that episode, the Krenim were using a temporal weapon to wipe out entire planets from the timeline. Rayner also mentions that the time bugs are left over from the Temporal War. This references Star Trek Enterprise and the Temporal War waged by Daniels and others. Most people aware of the Temporal War were from the 30th century, about 200 years before the events of Discovery Season 3. So I like the fact that they're kind of pulling from some more modern Trek too to get some of their things here. But one we have to remember is Stamets and his tardigrade DNA. Burnham knows Stamets will also be aware of the time shifts because he lives outside of time because of his tardigrade DNA. This references Discovery Season 1, specifically the episodes Choose Your Pain and Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. In Choose Your Pain, Stamets injects himself with the tardigrade DNA after he and Burnham realize that using their own overgrown tardigrade named Ripper to navigate the spore jumps is killing the creature. In Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, Burnham is stuck in a different time loop that only Stamets is aware that it's happening. So, pulling from themselves. I like it. But the most fun one, guys, to me, without any question, our good friend Jet Reno's Vesper Martini. Rayner and Burnham are on Discovery during the moment that Osira attacks the ship. This references the Season 3 finale, The Hope Is You, Part 2, in which the crew had to fight the Emerald Chain forces to take back the ship. Reno is fighting off a few baddies, and Rayner has to pretend like he's a crew member from a different ship. Reno asks him to buy her a Vesper Martini ice cold when everything is back to normal. Of course, a Vesper Martini was popularized by Ian Fleming in 1953 in the first James Bond novel, Casino Royale. Guys, those are the fun things I love. And that's what I love about Discovery is they find the fun things. But guys, I've got one more piece of trivia. It is, I'm officially calling it Science Officer Stoddart's Trivia of the Week, because we need a little science, Haley, because let's talk about the warp bubble's purpose. When Rainer, Sammons, and Burnham decide to break the ship's warp bubble to stop the time bug, Burnham mentions that the warp bubble is what protects us from the effects of relativity. This rarely, very neatly explains the warp speed in Star Trek. It is, in a sense, a form of time travel, since traveling faster than the speed of light bends the regular way time is experienced. In the first 1964 original series pilot, The Cage, Enterprise navigator Tyler even says the time barrier has been broken, and Captain Pike refers to warp factors as time warp factors. Everything in Star Trek is kind of time travel, but the warp bubble prevents it from getting too confusing. Haley, can you science this up for us?
Yeah, essentially what the warp bubble does is it allows time inside of it to stay at its current rate of speed. So like we talk about this, you know, in exploring space, and we're talking about Artemis and taking people to Mars, right? So time as we know it and current space travel says if we want to go a certain distance, time passes no matter what. So like if we wanted to get to Jupiter, it would take so freaking long. Us three, let's say we go on the ship, we're not going to make it. We're going to be dead before we get there at our time as we see it. So a warp bubble, it basically encases the ship in the time that it's in, while the outside of the bubble, time passes differently. So it allows our crews in all of our Star Trek iterations to be able to travel great distances and actually be the ones to get there and not be really, really old and cantankerous and, you know, arthritic-y and all this stuff, or be dead. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be their great, 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 great grandkids that are actually going to get to these planets because we have explored so much of space. Does that help?
I am so glad you are here. I have heard people define and describe warp bubbles many, many, many times, but you, my friend, made it make sense.
Well, thank you.
We've all been learned. Guys, I want to get into some of the more finer points of this week's episode too. I've got a few topics to talk about, thanks to some of our friends at Den & Geek too for giving me some ideas. But topic number one, guys, is the episode time travel moments, because they hit a few and they were fun. We had, of course, the Red Angel going to the San Francisco Fleet Yards when Discovery is still being constructed. I really thought that was fun, and I thought that was cool. Going back to the battle with Control, Book and Burnham have a moment, and if you bear with me just a minute, all of our listeners, I apologize to you if there's an audible gasp for what is about to happen to Miss Amy Nelson, but yeah.
Oh, goodness. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Book and Burnham have a moment, and of course, Zora and the future as well. Guys, I'm just kind of curious. What was your favorite moment in the time jumping in particular? Was there one of the places they went to, or one or two of them that just like, yeah, it was kind of nice to kind of revisit that or get a little different perspective. Haley?
I liked when they ended up in the Fleet Yard. I thought that was kind of neat because, you know, that isn't really something we see all too often. I mean, we've definitely seen a ship go into space dock and, you know, get a refit or get fixed and the crew has to go off for whatever reason. But the beginnings of the ship, and I loved the interaction of like, oh, and he didn't even question like why they were there, why their uniforms look different, nothing. Like he was just like, oh, I didn't realize the infection was already happening. I thought we still had more time. Okay. And he just, you know, went about his work. And I thought that was really kind of fun.
What about you, Amy? Did you have a favorite moment of these?
Yeah, I found it very intriguing that they chose to go back the very first jump
while they're jumping to the future. I thought, wow, out of all the times, like that critical moment between season two and season three, we're getting this little fill-in of, you know, the action on the ship and everyone's trying to gather themselves and they're going to crash land on the planet. Like, it just connected so wonderfully. And I really liked it. It was fun. I sort of feel like this episode was a bunch of little short treks. You know how we're like, yeah, we should get what's filling in between here. And we got, there were 8 jumps. I counted them.
I have 2. I'm going to go back to the Burnham and Book moment where they jumped and they were getting the pieces they needed. And you have that moment between Burnham and Book. And it just reminds you how wonderful those two characters are together and how well David Ajala and Sonequa Martin-Green play off of each other. The chemistry is just so strong and so there, and it's just, it comes across so natural. And to put, especially put Burnham in that moment where you actually see how much she still loves Book. And even though she's been trying to kind of bury it and play it off all season, how much of it is truly still there. I think it's a great moment for the show. And I hope it's something that it looks like maybe even in next week's episode, we're going to start seeing that relationship kind of break some of those barriers again. And I'm really looking forward to that. And the other one I really like, guys, was I actually love the future jump because of it's reminding me of the Calypso episode. There's something about Zora being this AI, but she has personality and she's grown, and to be in the future and see her hear in this AI's voice, the distraughtness over what's happened and everybody being dead and gone. And while it was predictable, I'm going to say that I agree with you of all of it. This was probably the most predictable thing we saw. I felt like, it's like, oh yeah, we're going to see a time jump where they fail. But how it played off with Zora and Burnham and how they're treating this AI like it's a crew member, not just the computer. It's a crew member. And I just think that is so cool and so magical. And it, like I said, going back and reminding me of the Calypso short trek with the conversations in that episode, in that short trek. I just love this. And I love how the dynamic of it gives Burnham and Rayner that extra motivation, which they really don't need. They're both pretty motivated. But then when they fully realize, you know, what happens if things go wrong, it's predictable, but it's powerful still. And the fact Zora like has the screen blocked off and the door is shut, all these things, because it's like almost like she wants to blind herself from the trauma that's happened. And I just, to make an AI that kind of powerful, kind of have that emotion, I think was really well done. And it's something they've done very well with Discovery. But the other thing I want to talk about too in this episode, because is the relationship between Rayner and Burnham. Because I have thoroughly enjoyed Captain Rayner from the get-go. I love the actor who's performing as him. I love the confrontation in episode 3 between him and Tilly. And what I'm liking seeing, and again, Amy, I go back to some of it is a little predictable, but it's still the path they're taking to get Rayner there. Mm-hmm. And him fighting with Burnham at the beginning of the episode over different points of view. But then you see it really happen for me with Rayner, that moment with Stamets, when he's talking about, because they're both in a way feeling washed up and feeling left out. Rayner from losing his captaincy and Stamets because they shut down the Spore Drive program. And they're both kind of trying to refine their way. And it really made a connection between the two of them. And it really, I think that's when you start seeing Rayner really realize there's more, this is a different situation and I need to adapt some too. And I think that's a really big moment in this episode, Amy.
Yeah, he needed to learn, and yes, very predictable, but I will give Discovery credit in teaching us people who are watching this how to notice that you are wrong and then fix it and still continue to have a good working relationship and not be all, ooh, I'm pissed at my boss. No, you've got to work with this person. So how Discovery is taking life lessons and putting them in front of us, I really hope that all of us, and especially me, but can see how to have better relationships. I feel that's what discovery does best.
Well, and I think, Haley, I'm curious for your thoughts on this too, because with Rainer too, I don't necessarily think he's a jerk or an a-hole. He's a product of what he went through with the Federation collapsing because of the burn. And then he loves the Federation so much, but he's become so mission focused, and it's straight to the business and straight to the point. But it takes somebody who's a leader, who's a captain. And even though Rainer is no longer captain, he's still that leader and he still cares. And the hardest thing to do is to adapt and make change from a way you've known pretty much all your life that got you to where you were. And Rainer now is starting to see that, wait a minute, there's more than one way. And discover, even though, like I said, it's predictable, but like Amy said, the way they execute it is very well done.
Well, yeah. And like I said earlier, you know, he is a product of his experiences and how he had to perceive the universe and this Star Trek world that he's from. And, you know, it's colored everything, and it continues to color his interactions with others, how he handles things. And so he's now interacting with a crew of people that come from a universe 900 years in the past with completely different experiences and different traumatic things that have happened to them. And, you know, they've got to find a way to relate to each other and understand how to operate, how to work together through the lenses that they see through. And I think this is going to help him open up and learn to be in command and be in charge of things, but come at it from, I don't have to have the answer right this second. It's not necessarily always action first. You know, we think of the burn and everything post that. They were always on edge. They were, you know, action, and you had to be ready to fire and take the, you know, I don't know how to put this, not necessarily take the road that's less traveled. They had to take the road that was traveled, you know, weapons always at the ready kind of stuff. And that's not necessarily how Discovery operates. And, you know, this collaboration of, hey, we've all got to work together rather than one person just having all the answers, one person doing everything and figuring things out. And so I think that this episode really helped him understand how the crew uses their connections and uses their friendliness and, you know, this complacency that he wants to say is a negative to really help themselves through this universe and navigate the time that they're in from the time that they were from.
Very well said. Guys, there is one more thing too, one more topic I want to hit, because I think it's an important topic. And I know one of the biggest criticisms of Star Trek Discovery has been the aspect of it's the Michael Burnham show, and where it's so much focus on Burnham. But to have this moment of Burnham versus Burnham, again, very predictable trope, but I think very necessary, because it's a reminder of how much this character has grown, developed, and changed over the course of this show. And how amazing Sonequa Martin-Green has been as Michael Burnham from start to now, and making this character grow, where you see this early version of Burnham that is just pure raw emotion, uncertainty, everything's just churning with her. To see this Burnham now, who is confident, capable, understands what it means to be a captain, I think that's one of the magics of this run of Star Trek Discovery. Even though, yes, it's been one more central character focused, I think when it's all said and done, Michael Burnham's character arc might be one of the deepest and most evolved character arcs of any Star Trek character we've had from start to finish. That's just my personal opinion, but seeing this was really a reminder, because I haven't gone back and watched a lot of those early Discovery seasons yet, but I just really felt like, Wow, this is of everything is really showing you how much this not only has Burnham changed, but how much the show has changed and evolved from when it first started, Amy.
Yeah, I did a recent rewatch, before season five. So season one, two, and three are very fresh in my mind. I don't remember Burnham being this angry, angst seeing this. However, I'm letting it slide because of exactly what you said, Kyle. This character development that we've had over the past four seasons has been truly remarkable. She has learned so much. She's more patient. And although she started, way above where I think most people are once they become a mutineer, it was good to contrast. And so I'm letting it slide because I didn't really buy it, but you're right. To show the change, I think it needed to be that drastic. Haley?
Yeah, I would agree. It did seem a little more angry than what I remember. But at the same time, I think she was very much trying to, we have to remember she grew up on Vulcan and she's coming back and joining humans. And it's also this, do I lead with logic? Do I lead with my emotions? And, she didn't go through the Kolinar, but she very much is riding that same wave that we see Spock riding, where it's how much do I let my emotions control me? How much do I let my logic and this reasoning that I grew up in? And so that internal conflict within herself, and then you add in the conflict of, she's a mutineer and everything else that we know is going on in these early seasons with Discovery and with Burnham. It's that internal conflict that any 20-year-old's going to go through as they grow and change and learn who they are in themselves and in their world and in their family and in their friends and what they want out of life. And so I appreciate the contrast. And it is nice to see this person who now is very controlled with themselves and allows themselves to have their emotions and their emotions guide their decisions, but also pulls in their logic and their reasoning and is way more balanced and has worked through, some of these experiences that they had when they were younger.
Yeah. Again, I think too, and this is just, again, from my perspective, and we're not done with the season. I think when this is all said and done, I think the season is going to make us really take a reevaluation of those earlier seasons of Discovery and of the show as a whole, and really look at it in a different light. And I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people don't go back and rewatch Discovery from start to finish, because I think it's just the realization of some things with these characters and the growth of these characters is going to be something where it's like we weren't paying as much attention to it when we were watching it, but after the fact, and it's like, okay, this is going to inspire a rewatch because I think there's things I missed. I think there's things where I'm not remembering quite right. Let me go back and rewatch it. And I think that's something that this season is doing that's very interesting. Haley?
Well, it's like with Stamets, right? So I forgot how rude and how much of a jerk and an a-hole Stamets was in the earlier seasons. And so in these go backs, when they're going back and he's like, get it! And he's like, and Rainer's like looking at him like, what? He's like, yeah, I was a tad more rough around the edges. And I was like, a tad? I'm like, you were more than a tad rough in those earlier seasons. And so it's nice to even see with Stamets how much he's softened up and relaxed and allowed himself to not be so uptight and rude with people. And I thought that was great, too.
I love Rainer's line to Stamets. That worked a lot better than your spore drive line. So with that, guys, it is time to transport into our second away mission and talk a little Ready Room. So the Ready Room, this is the first chance I've had to talk about this since the season has started. And I have got, as I played catch up, because I literally spent a couple days ago catching up on all things Discovery this season. Amy, we talked about it a little bit before we got on the mic. Much shorter episodes of The Ready Room we're only running about 14 minutes apiece. And we know that there's some issues going on with Paramount and budget constraints. Still, it almost feels like they're rushed. I mean, it literally, especially in this episode, this was the first episode where I feel like they had some weird edits going on with the interview with Anthony Rapp. I got to ask, because you've covered it a little bit more with Kevin, what is your feeling about the Ready Room this season?
Well, I'm missing a lot of the extras that they used to throw in, i.e. fan art. Do you remember when we would see that as a little commercial, like, here's some fan art? I'm missing the multiple interviews. They did last, where the previous ones, they had like the special effects with the VR wall and with the Saru running. Like, that was super, the production. We didn't get this. I mean, yeah, it was fun to have a little mushroom trivia, but I'm like, really? We couldn't have had some science-y, some behind the scenes, because that's what I want to see. So with them being so much shorter, I'm missing a lot of the production side of it. So yeah, it's sad, but I still love them.
Yeah,
Will Wheaton.
But I gotta say, it felt like, at least for me with this interview with Anthony Rapp, it just felt like they were kind of going through the motions a little bit. They really didn't dive into anything significant, it felt like, other than they talked. One of the things I did like about was him talking about how his experience of being a new dad and how that's played into how he's portrayed the characters on this season. But Haley, what about you? What have you thought about the Ready Room so far, and what did you think of this week's episode?
So this was the first Ready Room that I've watched, because, you know, we have our rule around here that someone's always not watched the Ready Room, so we can't disappoint. Yeah, I did notice that it was a little bit shorter, and, you know, I wondered if this was, you know, in part because of everything that was kind of going on with writers and the strikes and everything like that. And so I just kind of chalked it up to that. And, you know, time constraints as far as, you know, whatever else was going on with Anthony Rapp or Will Wheaton, who's just wonderful. So yeah, I was a little bummed that it wasn't as long as well. I'm surprised that he knew the mushrooms, because honestly, I didn't know any of those. So that's massive applause. I also don't like mushrooms, so I don't cook with them. So that's another thing too.
Yeah, I felt it a little bit too with Will. Like, you could tell he was a little bit frustrated with his time constraints and what's going on. But it's always fun to see him. And I'm assuming we will still hopefully have the Ready Room when Strange New Worlds returns. But you still see how much joy and energy he brings to the Ready Room, even in this little bit of a shortened format. And I just something that's been so impressive to me. So this episode, just like you said, Amy, it just didn't feel like it had enough in it. Yeah. He didn't, you know, you did the little mushroom thing.
Outside of Anthony Rapp, there wasn't any substance to it.
Yeah, exactly. So there is one thing outside of the Ready Room I did want to bring up that was a kind of a fun thing I found out about yesterday on social media. Our favorite captain from Picard that wasn't Picard, Captain Shaw, and forgive me, I'm blanking on the actor's name right at
Todd Stashwick.
Todd Stashwick. Of course, he's a nerd. He's a self-proclaimed fan and all that stuff, but he also is a big fan of Dungeons and Dragons. Well, he hosted a live stream with a bunch of Star Trek actors for charity playing Dungeons and Dragons. And Will Riker, Games Master, that was something new for me. Dungeon Master Will Riker. But I watched a little bit of it. It was a lot of fun. If you can go online and find it somewhere, check that out. They had fun, and Todd has become such a great ambassador with Trek already. And I really, really hope there's some way whether we get him back on a Trek show.
Yeah, it was for charity, childhood cancer, and their goal was to raise $50,000, but they went above and beyond and raised $52,000. And if you follow Todd Stashwich is one of my new favorite to follow on Instagram. And I hardly don't follow any of them, but he is so darling and just dear and so appreciative of the fans. So he's always, he was very like humbled that the fans really showed up and went above and beyond. It's great.
And like I said, he's become such a, so quickly become such a great ambassador for Trek too. It's just, it's wonderful to see. But guys, I'm going to get us warped out here because I want to talk a little bit about the Orb of Prophecy. So of course we are wrapping up things here, covering episode 4 of season 5 of Star Trek, Face the Strange. But we did get a little bit, if you watched it, and Haley, I know you tend to avoid the previews, but we did get a little preview of Orb of Prophecy, looking into next week's episode, Mirrors, where it looks like Book and Burnham back together doing a little adventure. This could this be the episode where we get a little bit more of the connection between Maul and Book?
Well, I hope so.
I'm kind of intrigued by this because I think that's going to be a very interesting story where we start to see that maybe them turning the corner and not be the adversaries so much as maybe, okay, maybe we need to try to work together, but can you trust them? Maybe they're just going to go after the puzzle pieces themselves. But I'm looking forward to this. It does feel, it does have a little bit of a feeling of a episode from season 4 with them kind of flying into the unknown nebula and debris coming around, but I'm curious to see how this is going to play out. And anytime you've got Book and Burnham teaming up for an adventure, I'm all for it. Plus, you know, that usually means Grudge is going to be on our screen at some point. Which makes me and the FPNet Tribbles very happy. So, but with that, guys, first and foremost, I just want to say it has been great to be back in the captain's chair with two of my favorite people on the planet talking Star Trek, talking Discovery. It's been so much fun and I'm so happy to be back and I'm so happy to see my friends on the screen. And that's just, it helps me get through and heal up from everything I've been in real life wise. So thank you so much to my absolutely amazing crew for this episode. It's been a lot of fun.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Of course, too, this is the Union Federation podcast, again, on both the Fandom Podcast Network and the BQN Network. We appreciate you guys joining us. Of course, the Fandom Podcast Network, you can find us on fpnet.podbean.com or the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel. Amy, you are the Borg Queen of BQN. Where can everybody find and what is going on at BQN these days? Because I can't keep track anymore.
Listen, you just search BQN and all of our shows will come up. You can subscribe to any of them. Make sure to subscribe to Union Federation, though, because that's the one you're listening to. I also am on All Good Things, and we have fun discussing all of Star Trek in different series. It's really fun. And I am on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. I am on our Facebook group, and I'm now on BQN has a Discord server. So please find me there, Amy Nelson 522. And yeah, have fun there. It's my new favorite place. I'm loving Discord.
Yes, I'm having a lot of fun with the, now that I'm having some time to dive into the Discord. Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hey, Haley, where can people find you on socials?
You can find me lurking in our Facebook group, as always. I keep an eye on everybody, so just watch out. I'm trigger happy sometimes, so just be careful. You can also find me on Instagram and on Blue Sky at Trekkie01D. If you try Instagram, please send me a message first because I don't accept random people, so please send me a message.
And of course, I'm Kyle. You can find me on, of course, everywhere on the Fandom Podcast Network. I will be doing a lot of things because Kevin is on special assignment in a land down under, hopefully enjoying very much a reunion with the lovely Aaron Gill at Reitzel. And, you know, there's a happy anniversary to the two of them, the 26th of this 26th. They will be celebrating their second wedding anniversary already, Amy. You were there. You saw the event.
I was there. Yes.
Of course, you can find me on Twitter at AKyleW. You can find me on Instagram at Threads at AKyleFandom. I am on Discord now at AKyleW as well. And if you want to follow me and what I'm doing on watching movies and stuff, I am on Letterboxd too under KSport16. Yeah, I got to update mine. It's a little, but Kevin, I think at last for this year, I was already over 140 movies seen. So Yeah. So, but again, you can find Union Federation on all of your major podcast catchers, whether it's under the BQN network banner or with the Fandom Podcast Network banner, whether it's iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, all of it. You can find us. And of course, visit the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel to see the video version of this show. Please give us a like, a subscribe, and share us out. We appreciate your support as we continue to try to grow our YouTube presence as well. Again, a wonderful thank you to this amazing crew because they're the stars. I'm just here trying to make sure the inertial dampeners are off. So, but it is one time once again to dock this ship back into Starbase. We are covering all of season 5 of Star Trek Discovery, the final adventure. We will be back in a week's time to cover it. Episode 5, the halfway point already, guys. I can't believe it. It's going too quick. It's just going too quick. But thank you so much for joining us. We do this for you guys. We love our listeners. We love the participation and input you guys give us. And it makes it that much more fun. So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, hailing frequencies are now closed.